Jema. So, we are continuing with the mother on education, some of her essays. And as always, she is showing us a new way to deal with old problems that have vexed humanity. And the beauty is she has shown in every field a new approach, not just an attitude, a new way that is needed to change life upon earth, the terrestrial life. And whether we follow or not is a different story. Very few are ready to follow. Very few are even believe in it. Most people are happy just worshipping and praying for their little needs. Ultimately, that's God's lament. He comes to give us something much more beautiful and powerful, but we want only immediate short-term remedies. But that's a different story altogether. So, the terrestrial conditions, the earthly conditions, are no doubt life is, as Sri Aurobindo says in Savitri, twi-natured earthly life, where good and evil, joy and sorrow, they are intertwined with each other. And therefore, depending on how you look at it, people try to find their own ways. Those who look at only the dark side, they say life is full of suffering. Not exactly true. Life has plenty of joy in it also. But there is sting of suffering, there is pain. And then they say life is all full of suffering and misery and it can't change. Therefore, the only solution is to withdraw into the silence and peace of Nirvana, never to come back on this dreaded place or wretched place, as they call it. So this one solution which has been offered, and is the one extreme. The solution is, as the mother recounts in the essay we are going to read, is about that prototype is Gautama the Buddha. Of course, there are plenty who talk about it, that well, life is full of suffering, dukkham, that's the fact, that's how it starts. And he says that well, in a sense, yes, that whatever happiness you may have, it ends badly. Well, it does end badly in the sense that, well, death comes. So, there is a path through which you can arrive at a state from where you don't have to come back to life. So, when the question is asked, what about many? So, well, the logic given is that, well, they all can follow the path and go into Nirvana and be rest in peace, in the true peace. This one solution which has been suggested to mankind. And the other solution, this is not a solution really, it's like bypassing the problem. So, the other solution which has been suggested is that she gives the example of St. Paul, who saw the suffering of mankind and he could not completely devote himself to the spiritual pursuit. So, he went back to, or rather he thought that social service and helping humanity by various means, outer means, whatever means one has, is the thing to be done. That is what will lead to salvation. So his method was that serve humanity, help humanity, and that will lead to salvation. So we see shades of these two solutions everywhere. Then, and many people, because there are both these impulses in mankind, one is to somehow find a way out of suffering, so that leads to an extreme solution of Nirvana, Mukti or whatever else. The second is to, because we are never really fully connected, disconnected from others. So there is a connectedness and there is a larger impulse in mankind that I need to, help others. So there the solution is that, okay, fine, by various outer means available to us, we should help. But again, it leads you nowhere. At the end story is the same. So, these two solutions are clearly imperfect. And while they may work for a few individuals, they do not really improve or change the life upon earth. So, the logic of Mother and Sri Aurobindo is that the circumstances of life are the result of the consciousness in which we are in. So, if you want to change the terrestrial conditions, you have to change the consciousness. Whatever else you may do, whatever else, whether you complain, whether you are happy, ultimately life upon earth, if you have to change, you have to change your consciousness. And here comes, they say that, well, not only you can, you must, but it is possible. And this is the thing that they suggest. So, this is the first one which we'll read. So she suggests both these solutions don't work. Really, if you look at it sincerely, on page 97, helping humanity. Men have canonized the first and deified the second in their attempt to express their gratitude and admiration. But very few have sincerely tried to put into practice the lesson and example that were given to them. It's true. However much we may do, ultimately we'll do some free eye camps or, you know, have a hospital where we are running the show, some free, or run orphanages, but we'll use it as a part-time thing, not as a means. Equally, the way of the Buddha, where you seek for personal nirvana, that is also not easy. And yet, even if that had been done, the conditions of human life would not have been perceptibly improved. For to help is not the same as to cure, nor is escaping the same as conquering. This very few people realize that, you know. Especially I keep saying in the medical field, we don't cure, we contain. That's all that doctors can do. You can cure when you know the real causes. And cure would mean that now the disease has no chance of coming back. So we don't cure. We don't cure anything actually, including common cold and everything. Because you give antibiotics to support. It's your body which cures. Supposing the body's immune system is gone, you may try any what way, but the person will die. So basically, we help, contain. But cure is a different thing altogether. So she says that neither of these solutions can really work. And then she starts, this is the passage we want to read. Indeed, true happiness is the happiness one can feel in any circumstances whatsoever, because it comes from regions which cannot be affected by any external circumstances. So first thing she says is that if you have to escape from earthly life to discover happiness and peace, then it's a conditional freedom. And a conditional freedom by default is not really freedom. So freedom should be, even if you are living in bonds. Classic example is Sri Aurobindo himself, that in the jail, he discovers ultimate freedom. So you can be even in the worst situation, circumstances, and yet you are free. But this happiness is accessible only to a very few individuals, and most of the human race is still subject to terrestrial conditions. So ideally it should be, but most human beings cannot access it, so we need outer conditions. People should be nice and kind, roads should be good, and you know, basic living necessities should be provided. There are very few who, in whatever conditions they are in, they can discover happiness. So we can say on one hand that a change of the human consciousness is absolutely indispensable, and on the other hand that without an integral transformation of the terrestrial atmosphere, the conditions of human life cannot be effectively changed. So it's so logical she builds up. People often ask, what are we doing in the Sri Aurobindo ashram? Because we don't run free clinics, we don't do any free distribution of, clothes or medicines, or it's not a taboo, those who want to do independently, but that's not what the ashram is engaged in. At the same time, we are not cut off from life and practicing deep meditation in some nirvanic atmosphere. We are connected with life, so it's very perplexing. So people often wonder, so we are all like the first experimental beings who want to change the terrestrial conditions by embodying a new force and a new life and a new consciousness. So that's what she says. Only the appearance of a new force and light and power accompanying the descent of the supramental consciousness into this world can raise man out of the anguish and pain and misery in which he is submerged. So this obviously before the supramental consciousness is manifested. The date of this essay is November 1954. Now this is so logical that if you really want life to change here upon earth, man must change. And man will change if you want everybody to have a change of consciousness. If the collective consciousness remains the same, it's very difficult. So the very collective consciousness must change, meaning thereby a new principle of evolution, a new consciousness should be established upon earth. And more and more people will then automatically open, just like mental consciousness was established and those who were ready started opening, growing into some kind of a humanity. It's very interesting. For a long time, people think that evolution happened like this, that there was one layer of humanity, it was wiped away, then another layer, third layer. Modern evidence suggests there were 8-9 different types of humanoid or subhuman species which coexisted with the modern man. So it's very fascinating. Genetically, it's proved now that there were, and I suspect something similar is happening today. There are people with a new consciousness. Their understanding, vision, experience, the way they deal is very different from many others, but they are all, we are outwardly all generically human. So she says that you have to first establish it. Then slowly it happened that the modern man or that human actually went on the evolutionary curve while others collapsed and disappeared. So this is something which is happening very much. Nature is striving toward the new manifestation. So those who want to go that way will be supported. Nature is striving toward this new manifestation, but her ways are tortuous and her march is uncertain, full of halts and regressions, so much so that it is difficult to perceive her true plan. However, it is becoming more and more clear that she wants to bring forth a new species out of the human species, a supramental race that will be to man what man is to the animal. What were the signs? She says in 1912, the restlessness and this hyperactivity. Again, later on, she says this hyperactivity in creation. 57, on there is a talk where she speaks of this extreme hyperactivity. So the restlessness, we see that, you know, people that time were in for something new for the sake of new, and then the two great wars. So the whole nature was restless for something to come out, and the same thing we see today, and it's part of that labor pains through which the new creation will take place. But the advent of this transformation, this creation of a new race, which nature would take centuries of groping attempts to bring about, can be effected by the intelligent will of man, not only in such a shorter time, but also with much less waste and loss. So eventually it is destined. She's saying even before the supramental advent that there are all the signs. Sri Aurobindo in 26 or 25 speaks about signs that the supramental manifestation is near. And one of the signs was science is bursting to its seams. Knowledge is bursting at its seams. You need to burst forth into something new. And we see this happening because just very recent the Hubble, the telescope, has brought images which has changed our perception of the Big Bang. Because ideally, people date Big Bang, that, you know, this was the moment when creation started. So then the early formations cannot be stars and constellations. They have to be very vague particles. And now people have found that when they go back, because it's now bringing images from very far, they discover constellations which should not be there. So now it's all about cyclic time, and, you know, there is no beginning, no end. So that whole Indian theory is, so you see how science is bursting beyond its seam. In every sphere, near-death experiences last year, and people are talking now about, you know, they are trying to explain it based on quantum field, etc. But that is one way, but that there is something which continues. So many such discoveries are taking place in every field, new psychology, new education. Science has reached that point, had reached that point, now it is beginning to bring out something. And then second thing he says, rise of men who wield great vital influence. So Hitler and, you know, Stalin and those people who can really move the masses, men of the masses, and even in music and all this came, who can, you know, vital influence. She's not speaking about either intellectual, ideative or spiritual influence, vital influence. That also is there, and one can see those crowd pullers and crowd movers. Then the third thing was rise in the abnormal things, abnormal people, madness, abnormal manifestations. That's been described in Bhavishya Purana also, that this is how the new, something new will come. So all that Sri Aurobindo had seen, and Mother had also foreseen, and now we can see that more and more that we are near to that. Now, here the integral yoga has its rightful place and utility. So, who is really, in one sense, qualified for integral yoga? She'll tell us. the royal road of entry. But here she is saying that it's not just about individual nirvana, and it's not about applying the same old remedies. At one place she says that we are not here about the ashram. When somebody asked about the ashram, its shortcomings, she says, by its shortcomings, the ashram belongs to the old world. By its aspiration, it belongs to the new world. And then she says that, we are not here to do what others do. We are here to do what others can't do because they do not know how to do it. So very often we see that even here, people fall back on the old mental ways. For example, make a committee, try to control things by the mind, doesn't work. We know the story of Admiral Rutledge, who wanted to control everything in two months. I think he was US Navy Admiral, and he had, it's written in Udar's book, and this was confirmed by someone else also. He said, "Mother, I'll correct these fellows. You give me just 2 months." Mother said, "Take 6 months." She laughed after 1 month. He says, "Thank you." Because this is a principle of freedom which applies. And if you try to do any other way, by any external control, it doesn't work. So here she says very clearly that, well, that integral yoga, for yoga is meant to overcome by the intensity of its concentration and effort, the delay that time imposes on all radical transformation, on all new creation. So the emergence of a new species is certain. It's in the logic of creation, this evolution. But she says by integral yoga, you can hasten the process. That's all. It is as certain as tomorrow's sun. And then she says, the integral yoga is not an escape from the physical world, which is, it's not about nirvana, which leaves it irrevocably to its fate. Nor is it an acceptance of material life as it is, without any hope of decisive change, which is about helping humanity through the old ordinary means of, you know, as I said, orphanages, free schools and free hospitals, etc. Or of the world as the final expression of the divine will. So those who believe this is the end product, and obviously if this is the end product, then we have to doubt the creativity of the creator, because we all know who we are and what we are, and we don't have to. So it's all very logical. If you really read through Madan Sri Aurobindo's writings, absolutely logical. Because if this is the end product, then, well, what kind of a... So that's why people have tried to explain this Maya and creator is above. He has nothing to do with creation. So who has created? Well, we don't know. We don't care. You have to just come out of it. Seek some escape. So then she says something very interesting. The integral yoga is especially intended for those. So what is the take-in criteria? Somebody who has read a lot of spiritual literature, who has gone to many religious places, is that person more suitable a candidate? Or who is more, somebody who can meditate a lot, is he more suited? Here she gives who is suited. And this is something only the divine will know. Or the person will know in his aspiration. So she says the integral yoga is especially intended. Others can do. There is no embargo. Especially intended for those who have realized in themselves all that man can realize and yet are not satisfied, for they demand from life what it cannot give. They are not seeking escape. They want perfection of earthly life in some way or the other. Whether it be perfection in outer world, but perfection in inner life, in attitudes, relationships, in collective life, everywhere. So they are seeking that, seekers of that perfection, and they are wanting from life that life is unable to give. And they, for them, the integral yoga. These who yearn for the unknown and aspire for perfection, who ask themselves agonizing questions and have not found any definitive answers to them, they are the ones who are ready for the integral yoga. So all can come. One can say literally, all are welcome. As they say that many are called, but few are chosen. So these are the ones who are conscious. Mother uses the word heroic souls. They don't want to escape. They are not running away from life either. But they want perfection here, whatever be the means. And here is the means. She says that, you know, these are people, what do they ask? They ask a series of fundamental questions. And these questions are formulated this way. Why is one born if only to die? Our scriptures say those who are born will die. Well, but why? So why are we born if only to die? Why does one live if only to suffer? Why does one love if only to be separated? What kind of imperfection is this? That love is born a passing guest. Love comes to man a passing wandering guest. Why should it be like that? Why should it turn into hate? Why does one think if only to err? Why does one act if only to make mistakes? The sole acceptable answer is that things are not what they ought to be. And that these contradictions are not only not inevitable, but they are rectifiable and will one day disappear. And why Aurobindo was insisting on the supramental consciousness? He says into a letter to Barin. He says, you have experienced, realized everything. You have seen the divine everywhere. You have realized nirvana. What are you striving for? He says, the supramental. He says, what about the supramental? He says, I am rising only to the first of the three layers of the supermind after 10 years of tapasya. This 1920. So he says, still, you already entered the supramental. He says, no, I want perfect perfection with no possibility of error anywhere and in anything. That is the kind of perfection. So we can be rest assured that he has foreseen everything. And it's a foolproof plan this time, because he has foreseen. He didn't want a half-hearted. That's why the mother dissolved the overmind creation, because she said, you'll become like gods, you'll create a new religion, a religion which has never been so far. But that's not what we want. We want something new, something which man has not even imagined. For the world is not irremediably what it is. So this, the other, many of them are Mahavakyas. It's not doomed to be this forever. And actually, if there is the divine imminent in the world, or the divine is at the origin of this world, then it cannot end with this kind of a half-hearted creation. The earth is in a period of transition that certainly seems long to the brief human consciousness. So they have said it may be a few centuries, but which is infinitesimal for the eternal consciousness. So one way when we look at it, oh my God, 300 years, quite a lot. Another way if you look at it, 15 billion, now that time frame has changed. So just human species, maybe 1.5 million or more. So if you see from that point, few hundred years is actually nothing. So she says, depends on, and for the eternal consciousness, just a moment. And this period will come to an end with the appearance of the supramental consciousness. Means this is the solution with all our heart and mind and soul and life and breath we should turn towards. All other halfway measures, halfway homes, and that's what he says in God's labor, a halfway in is his pilgrimage. Man raises his altars to a dim fire, you know, or a demon altar he chooses, because he wants quick results. He wants something urgent, immediate. But those who are ready to go through right up to the end, that's how she says victory is to the most persevering and the most enduring. They are the pioneers. All others will benefit from it. Nobody will be left behind. But they who are ready to go, who have understood that no human way will make earthly life perfect. Whatever you may try anything. That's what I was saying the other day in the medical department. I can say it here openly. Anyways, that you may try whatever way. You can get the best doctors, the biggest hospital, the best nursing care, because that's what ultimately, if you really want a foolproof so-called system, then you have to imitate, make a very good corporate hospital. But people die even in corporate hospitals. They die in the best medical hospitals abroad, here. They die. Rarely you will see a person crossing 100. There are. With all the medical help available. Data, statistics, take it. You can, because you have to realize that there is a limit to this. So is there something which can go beyond these limits? That's what we have to try. What people do everywhere is their concern. Not that one should not try. Man should try to progress. There are people who believe that, well, by human beings we can create perfection. Let them try. There's nothing wrong. Because mind and has to arrive at that level where it begins to realize the limitations of the mind itself. So she says, the contradictions will then be replaced by harmonies and oppositions by synthesis. This new creation, the appearance of a superhuman race, has already been the object of much speculation. And so people started using the word Superman. Look at it, how the Asura imitates and spoils a word. One term recently people were asking, what do you think about the non-dual consciousness which is in use? I said, this is a trick of the Asura to confuse you. Because what is non-dual? There is no duality of good and bad, right and wrong. You have to transcend and you can speak about it. Okay, you give this doctrine to the average person. What happens? He says, well, you are being judgmental. You should not be judgmental, that's a part. But because everything is moving forward, one should not be judgmental or condemning, or because that doesn't exist. But the moment you bring a greater truth into a domain where it doesn't apply, like ChatGPT to a 10-year-old, so you have cut off the evolutionary journey, the processes through which his brain has to develop, the logical thinking, because you have provided answers. So this is where she is reminding us that the words Superman, Arya, they have all been distorted, actually. And now this non-dual. Non-dual means there is a consciousness which transcends. Other days somebody was saying, we are co-creators of reality. All this is true. But if I start believing that I am a co-creator while I am a puppet of the vital and mental forces, then I am just fooling myself. Because whatever I am creating is, creator is creating. It's true, but true in a very qualified sense. If we don't put those, then everybody, it's like, well, I do my thing, whatever way I do it. It can lead to a chaos and anarchy. Well, chaos and anarchy may be intended by the divine will as part of the plan. That's a different story altogether. But we should not think that that is the new creation. That mistake we should not make. It may be part of the intended plan. So she says, however, yet those who have realized this consciousness in themselves, the supramental consciousness. So in 54, she knew that there are people who are realizing it. Those have realized. Of course, Sri Aurobindo and the mother, and there must have been people who were already experiencing it, are usually more anxious to become the Superman than to give a description of him. So you ask these people, tell me, what is the Superman like? What is the supramental? They are not concerned. They want to move in that direction. So don't come and look for those specimens who will catch you and describe to you. But they are moving in that direction. They want to first fully arrive there. That's how Sri Aurobindo said, let the kingdom come, the crown can wait. And the mother says, when she was conversations in agenda, she says, well, mankind will understand one day. They will look back. Right now it's not interesting for them. I'm sharing it just by way of sharing. They won't even understand. It's later on when they look back, then they will discover, oh my God, this is how it happened. She says, this is how things happen. But right now we are in the midst of that process. So then she says, however, because some hint has to be given to man, it may be useful to say what the Superman will certainly not be. Because the conception of Superman by Nietzsche was the conception of a very Asuric kind of Superman. That's why I said many of these terms have been spoiled. A hard, cruel, a man who is beyond man, but he can suppress man. Shobhinda says, on the other hand, the Superman will be somebody who is so humbly leans to lift humanity. That's the mark of Superman. When in Savitri it's described, the higher kind shall lean to lift up man. This is the description. And he even says, become like the cow of plenty for all. This is your road to supermanhood. Superman is not a self-aggrandizing or egoistic person with great powers like Ravan. That I am God, I am God. Superman often clothes himself in ordinary drape of ordinary humanity. So that's how she describes here what Superman will not be, so as to clear away certain misunderstandings. For example, I have read somewhere that the superhuman race would be fundamentally cruel and insensitive. Since it is above suffering, it will attach no importance to the suffering of others and will take it as a sign of their imperfection and inferiority. And at one place she even goes on to say, she says that people will try to make a new religion of Sri Aurobindo and a very cruel religion. And then she says, but all must know that Sri Aurobindo is great and compassionate and benevolent and mighty. He's very compassionate. So all those who try to condemn, and you know, that's not what supermanhood is. Supermanhood is if you see somebody in dirt, you don't say, oh, dirty fellow, you see, you fell down. You are no good. He will lean to lift that man out of the dirt and the mud. Whatever it takes. That's the path of supermanhood. So she says he will not be. Because you know this is the inferior kind. This is the human kind. This, we were talking about someone. And I'll not name of course. But when this lady would come to Shabda or other places. I'm not mentioning the name. The moment she would see other human beings, why are they here? Why are they here? That kind of. Yeah, real. I'm telling you, it is true. First hand. Who are these people? Why are they here? Who are they? Means to try to, you know, as if they are some inferior. Just like in certain parts in Bengal they used to practice, no? Chhotte log. This is a new version of Mlecha, the discarded, the fallen. But the Lord has come for the discarded and the fallen. That's His greatness. O thou who disdainest not the worm to be, nor even the clod, therefore we know by that humility that thou art God. Mother would not discard even a handkerchief which has been passed. Because she says, you know, this has served me for so long. How can I just throw it away because a new hanky has come? So many examples she has given. Even a faded flower. She would rather caress it till it blooms. Real stories. Rather than just, why have you got this kind of a thing? So, Sri Aurobindo, what a power. And yet he would not say, take this letter, post it. No pomp, no show. Even in Darshan, he's just sitting like the mighty Himalayas. He has to send something, as Nirodha describes, like a perfect gentleman, he would say, I suppose this letter has to be posted. And Nirodha writes, 100 hungry hands will jump. But he's not saying, see, please post this letter, this has to be posted, that has to be done. No. Perfect humility, perfect gentlemanliness. So this is the example of Superman. Superman is not, I am a superior fellow. Because the word super is attached. So, this sense of elite is a very dangerous thing. It tends to, you know, develop in all organizations. It develops in any organization, this elitist organization, like, high human beings club. So, this is what we have to avoid. Nature has destroyed it. That's how the Brahminical system went in, out of whatever people may say. It's true that they gave a lot of good. But it's also true that at one point of time, they started feeling proud about who they were. And the others were regarded as not fit for the knowledge, not fit for this. And the division started. Nature will not allow this kind of division for long. Same thing happened with the siege of Troy. You have to at some level accept, bear the burden of the of all. And how do we bear the burden? We bear the burden by acknowledging the common and the ordinary within us and offer it for transformation. And Shobhinda says that if you are not willing to become the most ordinary of the ordinary, you are not ready for this yoga. Oh no, no, I'll do only desk work, I'll sit and meditate and no. So this is where she reminds us. But such behavior, far from being a proof of superiority, is a sure sign of unconsciousness and stupidity. Because the baseline of this yoga is to see divine everywhere and in everyone. Not that, you know, there are some in whom who is higher and some lower. That's the old story. This is shown by the fact that as soon as man rises to a little higher level, he begins to feel compassion towards animals. See, this sign of a higher consciousness. Mahalakshmi is love. And there was this real story. A girl had come and she was very kind to animals. Towards then some ashramite called her. I see you are doing all this. This has nothing to do with yoga and spirituality. So she asked me. I said, that man has nothing to do with yoga and spirituality. This I can tell you for sure. So, she's saying that the moment you rise higher, you feel compassion towards animals. Automatically. Because that's the nature of Mother Shobhinda every day. Doesn't mean that you'll make a dog sleep on your bed or keep in your room. You don't have to do that. Compassion is not that. But compassion that you feel toward their, you know, and if their hunger, their afflictions, and so too towards everyone. But this ordinary solution will not suffice. This is what she is reminding us. Yet there is an element of truth in the conception of the unfeeling Superman. Now she is very minute. Surgery. It is this that the higher race will not feel the kind of egoistic, weak and sentimental pity which men call charity. So other day somebody was asking me, you said you should not sympathize with a man who is depressed. I said, yes, Shobhinda said that. That doesn't mean you will discard him or condemn him. You show him the way. But if you sympathize with depression, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry, what happened to you? It's pity, it's strengthening his suffering, it's not giving him away, it's making him feel special about his depression. Almost you are eulogizing. Like people at some point had done a whole candlelight, this thing, vigil for a boy who had committed suicide. Now suicide, whatever be the reason, is not something to be eulogized as an example to be presented before humanity. Society must change, there is no doubt about it. But when we start eulogizing and celebrating weakness and, you know, all this, so that's where she is reminding that what is the truth. This pity, which does more harm than good, will be replaced by strong and enlightened compassion. What is this strong and enlightened compassion, whose only purpose will be to provide a true remedy to suffering, not to perpetuate it. It's not like, okay, you feel and you start the old ways. No, the true remedy. So I had a little exchange even today. Every day something happens. So one of the patients was saying, you see my wound, see my repeatedly. And I said, your wound is fine, I've seen, it's healed. No, no, you see, I said, see, every day I'm not asking you because I'm trying to turn your mind away from the body. And you want me to get glued to the body. It's all right, fine. Now you have all the time in the world to, you know, you have a fracture which has been healed. Now you have all the time in the world to contemplate the higher mysteries of existence rather than keep glowing through, you know, this, look at here, look at here, look at me, I am having this pain. So this is only perpetuating. So while you understand, so you see the compassion which is strong and enlightened, which tries to root out the real causes of suffering. On the other hand, this conception describes fairly well what the reign of a race of vital beings upon earth would be like. So vital beings are the one who treat others like this with degradation, who, you know, depreciate others, who put them down, etc., etc. And therefore she concludes by saying, until the Superman can come in person to show man what his true nature is. People ask, what are the samples? Read the life of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And now I must add, from authentic sources. You will understand what Superman is. Read Sri Aurobindo's life. You will know what Superman is. And anybody's account. Read the mother's life. And you'll know what Superman is. So she says, but they are, see, they are so humble. Mother is not even saying read Sri Aurobindo's life. It might be wise for every human being of goodwill to become conscious of what he can conceive as the most beautiful. So she is showing the road to supermanhood. She is saying even an average person, you don't know about supramental, you don't know Superman, you don't know yoga, you don't know anything, doesn't matter. At least be a seeker for perfection of earthly life. And in what way? Not through AIs and gadgets. That's one aspect of progress. But she says, conceive as the most beautiful, the most noble, the truest and purest, the most luminous and best, and to aspire that this conception may be realized in himself for the greatest good of the world and men. It reminds me actually of Sri Aurobindo's writing on Arya. Who is an Arya? So what we can do, whether we believe in God or don't believe in God, at least we should be seekers after perfection. The most highest, noblest, widest, full of that compassion, full of wisdom, whatever we can, most beautiful conception we can have. And then she says, aspire to realize it within yourself and in the world, for the good of the world, not just for yourself. So this is a beautiful writing, and you know, everything is beautiful. But this is the path. I'll read this last part again. It shows us the way, the road to supermanhood. See how she says. And how different it would be if you read a book. And essays. Here she says, until the Superman can come in person to show man what his true nature is. Superman had not descended, by the way. Supramental had not manifested. 69 onwards, you will start seeing. And Nalnida says he may be next door. That's how he said after 69. The Superman may be just next door. Because then you will see more and more human beings evolving in that direction. But we have to understand this is 54. The Superman was the instant, immediate thing. The supramental race was still behind. Until the Superman can come in person to show man what his true nature is, it might be wise for every human being of goodwill to become conscious of what he can conceive. Doesn't matter. Conceive. You love someone, you have a relationship, try to conceive the noblest, best, highest, most luminous. Don't start discarding this, that, everything, and you know, say I love only God when you can't even love a human being. You are loving basically your own ego and you are using these big words. That's called Mithyachar and Dambhachar. So she is saying, the most beautiful, the most noble, the truest and purest, the most luminous and best, leaves it to us. And to aspire that this conception may be realized in himself for the greatest good of the world and men. And whoever has this, wherever he may be, even if he knows about Mother and Sri Aurobindo or not, he is or she is on the road to supermanhood. That's how beautiful this is. And quickly we'll just read this one problem, that how to solve the problem of terrestrial imperfection. So the solution is, as they have given, the spiritual evolution and the direction of that evolution, in a very summary way, the aspiration that helps in that evolution, who are ready for this evolution, all that she has mentioned in this brief essay. That no, we need not give up the dream. That's what last time we read, the dream of a collective perfection. But it will not come just by going back to the same old ways. For example, you can't create Ram Raj just by making a Ram temple and going back to the same methods. You have to reproduce Ram in your life and in your actions. That is fine. It's a good, it's a symbol. It's like a flag is a symbol. But unless you reproduce a symbol in your life, it becomes into a, you know, falsehood and imitation. You have to realize. And even Ram would want that. Not just outer worship. He would rather that we are like him and just try to just be even any, you know, as they say, charan dhuli of even an avatar of the Treta. Realize, you know, how difficult it is. And then there is the problem of woman, and she says, after saying that, well, human beings have always, you know, especially women have been oppressed, they have been, you know, of course, they have liberated and initiated a new era. But she says something very interesting. She says both men and women are slaves of each other. Oh, they are slaves. Yes, slaves, for so long as one has desires. For in their mutual relationships, man and woman are at once rather despotic masters and somewhat pitiable slaves to each other. Yes, slaves, for so long as one has desires, preferences and attachments, one is a slave of these things and of the people on whom one is dependent for their satisfaction. It's obvious. If you are dependent on anyone or anything, you are a slave. It's very simple. Thus, woman is enslaved to man because of the attractions he feels for the male and his strength. Because of the desire for a house and the security it brings. She's not saying whether you should do it or not. There is no moral judgment. She's just saying if you do it, it's a slavery. That's all. That's all that she's saying. And lastly, because of the attachment to motherhood. So as long as it is there, there is a slavery. Now, whether we like it or not, or we are bound by nature, is a different thing. Man too on his side is enslaved to woman because of his possessiveness. My woman, my girl, my wife, God knows. Till one day the wife says, okay, tata, bye bye. You with me, be with yourself. And the man says, but you are mine. He says, yes, but I am not yours. You believe I am yours, but you are not mine. Anyways, on a lighter note, but this kind of possessiveness, people used to display their wives, meet my wife. And you realize, well, you realize in a party setting, I have seen this happen, huh? Because the man is lost in his own world, Air Force party setting. So, he doesn't realize his wife is not there. And he suddenly says, and sir, meet my wife. And somebody else's wife. And and we are all seeing, what is he doing? And he says, oh, sorry. Where are you? See, somewhere else. Meet my wife. And some of them don't know, so they are all eager. And they are almost doing namaste and madam, all these things. Now it's, you know. So anyways, man too on his side is enslaved to woman because of his possessiveness. Sometimes people ask this in the ashram also. Bring along your wife. I said, don't tell this to my wife. She will take offense. In ashram, we don't. It's not regarded as a meritorious thing. We are all independent. Don't you know? We are not somebody's wife and somebody's husband. We are all independent. Yes, we have a beautiful relationship. We are in a relationship, as they say. Don't try to define it with your narrow terms. We are very good friends. So whatever way you want to, yes, society may call you husband and wife. So, you know, she says, so possessiveness, his thirst for power and domination. If this should be somebody whom I should control, nobody listens to me. See how divine has upset all his plans. Now the wife is the one who doesn't listen to him. Everybody else listens. Wife and the child. Earlier, man believed that at least my wife or my child is going to listen. My urge for domination. Now they are the ones who say, we don't care. Now you go wherever. So he tries it out in office. Because actually divine is freeing us from slavery. But we don't understand it. And because of his desire for sexual relations And because of his attachment to the little comforts and conveniences of married life. Hello, tea, please. Make a cup of tea. Food is being made, so man is like a lord sitting. Somebody is making. Poor lady who has been busy whole day, but she has to now do this for the man. He says, all this is slavery. Now women are smart. They say, you take your glass and keep it. Otherwise it had gone to that extent. Plate has to be served. And the lady who serves will pick it up. No more. You come and put it. And you keep the plate. That's it. So it's good. Huh? It's all good. Part of the plan. No Kaliyug. This is Satyug. It's not... That is why no law can liberate women unless they liberate themselves. Likewise, men may. Men too, in spite of all their habits of domination, will cease to be slaves only when they have freed themselves from all inner enslavement. It's one thing to joyously do something. But it's quite another to do it as a, you know, matter of duty. And this state of veiled struggle, she says, this will continue. And if you really go further, you realize the supreme, perfect consciousness and unite with the supreme reality, then what do you discover? For as soon as one attains this higher consciousness, one realizes that the difference between man and woman reduces itself to a purely physical difference. That's what is the realization of Sukhdev. The story of Sukhdev and Vyas I have talked about. Sukhdev passes and no woman is affected. And they ask, how come? They didn't care. They didn't adjust their clothes like during Vyas. He says, they said, well, Narad answers. He says, well, Sukhdev has no consciousness of the difference between man and a woman. And mother has been hammering, why can't you forget this? That you are a man and she is a woman. And therefore, women don't feel that difference. Biologically, there is a difference as of now. One day there will be some new species. But that's it. And biological difference brings certain factors. For instance, pregnancy, menstruation, all these complexities, they come. But it's not beyond it. They feel the same way. Fundamental feeling, fundamental problems are very much the same. For one dreams of a world in which all these oppositions will at last disappear. And where a being will be able to live and prosper, who will be the harmonious synthesis of all that is best in the human race, uniting conception and execution. So here she says something very interesting, that there has been a line of the masculine and the feminine, and now, but you don't find it anymore. And men are feminine in many respects and all women are masculine in many traits, especially in modern societies. But unfortunately, because of the physical appearance, the habits of quarreling is perpetuated, perhaps even aggravated by a spirit of rivalry. This is interesting. So she says, well, ultimately, till they realize they have to do their best. For one dreams of a world in which all these oppositions will at last disappear. And where a being will be able to live and prosper, who will be the harmonious synthesis of all that is best in the human race. That means not just becoming gender free. It joining in oneself, Ardhanarishwar concept, the masculine and the feminine elements in one being. So that's what should be ideative as well as emotional. Rational as well as faith. Spiritual as well as psychic. Dreamer as well as realizer. Ideative as well as executing. So this is the direction towards which the new humanity will go. Uniting conception and execution. These have been the two, masculine and feminine. Vision and creation in one single consciousness and action. In any case, until the manifestation of a new conception and consciousness compels nature to create a new species which would no longer have to yield to the necessity of animal procreation. Till this is there, the difference will remain in the consciousness. So that's why she kept saying, why can't you stop thinking of sex? Why can't you go beyond it? Because as long as it is there, this animality, this, because it's biological, so it will be very deeply rooted. So she said, when the necessity of animal procreation, this actually began, many men are growing incapable of sexuality. It's a grace and blessing, but world is, you know, trying ways and means. And thus be under the obligation of dividing into two complementary sexes, the best that one can be done for the progress. So what do we do right now? That's, she says, the best can be done to progress of the present human race is to treat both sexes on a footing of perfect equality. 55. Okay, let's see what Mother is saying. See how the world is moving in that direction. To give them the same education and training. Now it's Mother is modern of the most modern. Because if you see the context of 55 and see all over the world the struggle that was going on. And to teach them to find through a constant contact with a divine reality that is above all sexual differentiation the source of all possibilities and harmonies. And it may be that India, the land of contrasts, will also be the land of new realizations, even as she was the cradle of their conception. Now she uses the word maybe, and actually it's very interesting last few years. Not only we have a very active, you know, women cricket team in every sphere, proud of having women presidents on the house and, you know, women prime ministers. These are not common things, incidentally. And also, now women are flying, fighter pilots, all this. And recently, in the latest parade, there was also the Nari Shakti. So, in every sphere of life. So, which is something very interesting, very beautiful. And this is how the world must advance. Jai Ma.